New York Times chief wine critic Eric Asimov has written a book, How to Love Wine, telling the story of his journey from food lover to wine critic and also giving advice on how to develop our own palates. For instance, he says, skip the wine class. He says, you don't need to detect licorice snaps. You need to just like your wine. So find a good wine merchant and tell them to pick out bottles for you. He also says, take what wine critics say with a grain of salt. So do we all have our grain of salt handy? Because we have questions for Eric Asimov, who joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
A couple of lightning round questions for you, okay? We have to ask Eric Asimov, any relation?
Isaac was my uncle. I presume that's who you're speaking
of. Yeah.
Between the both of us, we've written more than 600 books.
And did he write 599?
Just about.
Yes. Well, there you go. And okay, here's the next lightning round question. Is it Syrah or Shiraz? S-Y-R-A-H or S-H-I-R-A-Z? Are they the same?
Well, it's both. It's both, depending on where the wine comes from France or from the U.S. In general, it's Syrah. When it comes from Australia, it's Shiraz, but it's the same grape.
I read this anecdote online somewhere about how they were exactly the same, except that the second one was Shiraz was said after someone had had too much wine.
Well, that may be the custom in Australia. It often works out that way, but you know, they are genetically identical.
What wines are you excited about now? Is there something new on the horizon? And we asked because some sort of memo went out and everybody had Merlots. And then suddenly the film in 2004, Sideways, came out.
Yes.
And
yes.
They hated Merlot's characters, rhapsodized about Pinot Noir, and then everybody switched to Pinot Noir.
There's a little bit of a herd mentality always when you're dealing with trends, whether it's fashion, food, wine. But the great thing that's happening right now is that we have a greater diversity of wines available. And so, for example, I'm obsessed with the wines of Sicily. This is a region where 25 years ago, or even less, if somebody talked to you about Sicilian wines, you thought about bad oxidized wines and awful sweet wines. Now it's got a thriving industry and some of the most unusual wines, some of which come from the slopes of Mount Etna, which is a very active volcano.
Well, by the way, recommend some makes.
From eastern Sicily, there's a young woman, Arianna Occhipinti, who is making an assortment of wonderful different wines. They're elegant, graceful, intense, and that's a combination that I'm always looking for. If you have something that's light and graceful but also intense, it's bound to be a really good wine.
And is it named after her?
Yes.
Okay.
That's her, and the label has got her name. From Mount Etna, if you ever see a wine with the label Calabretta, it's really fascinating. They don't release their wines for years. They pre-age them for you so that their most recent release is the 2002, already aged 10 years.
Huh. By the way, what makes a wine great? What makes a wine not just great, let's do first, expensive. Why is a bottle of wine $100?
A lot of it is supply and demand. When you create the illusion of scarcity and also create a must-have feeling, that's always going to drive prices up. And that's why a lot of Burgundy, for example, is so expensive. It's made in very small quantities. It's very labor-intensive. And there's not enough wine to go around, particularly since now you have a big and growing market in Asia and the former Soviet Union countries. It's not great for American Burgundy lovers to now be competing for this wine.
What makes a wine great in the way someone like you, a wine critic, would hold it up, even though it might be $15 a bottle?
At a minimum, they have to refresh. Why would you drink it otherwise? But beyond that, I think personally great wines are an expression of culture. They're the product of not just a winemaker, but a people and a place. And when a wine can express the heritage and culture of a people and at the same time be refreshing and complex enough so that you have to keep going back and tasting it again and again because you can't get around those aromas and flavors and so pleasurable that you want to keep experiencing it. And then there's the texture of a wine, which is often ignored, but just rolling it around in your mouth can be profoundly gratifying.
Can you do that for under $10 a bottle? And if so, please name them right now.
No, those are my secret stashes. No, honestly, every bottle at any price level is going to be palatable. But the problem nowadays is that you have a lot of boring wines. I mean, they're sound, but they're not interesting. And for me, the great values now are $15 to $20. Here you can begin to explore all over the wine world, places that up until recently we had no idea what they were doing. Ribera Sacra in western Spain, beautiful wines made on slopes that were originally carved out as vineyards by the Romans 2,000 years ago. Places like Slovenia, behind the Iron Curtain for so many years, but able to reconnect with their historic wine culture. Beaujolais, and here I'll name some names, Jean-Paul Brun, Marcel Lapierre, Pierre Chermet. They make wonderful wines for about $20 or so.
Well, and they also sound like wines. What do you think of all the new wines? I mean, there's the cupcakes and the layer cakes, and there's one named Josh, which I like because my beloved nephew's named Josh. I mean, these sort of trendy, there's like three frogs.
Well, you've got to separate the marketing from the wine. The wines with the marketing names, cupcake, yellowtail, whatever you want to call them, these are focus group wines, you know. There's a market out there. We'll figure out what the profile is, and then we'll shape the product to fit that profile.
Someone like me, anything with the name layer cake in it.
Well, there you go.
Even if
you know, sinful chocolate, that would sell a lot.
So that's focus group. That's funny. Leave us with, you know, one last. We're going off to a Christmas party, New Year's, dinner with friends. What would you recommend?
This is an old reliable, but this old reliable has changed dramatically in the last 10 years. And, of course, it's December. It's champagne. Mm. Champagne used to be dominated by a small number of big producers. But now, in the last 10 years, you've got dozens of small farmers who grow their own grapes and make the champagne as well, that are producing really interesting variations on the theme. Pierre Peters is a really good Blanc de Blanc. That's a champagne just made from Chardonnay. Aigle Aurier, that's a champagne that's more dominated by red grapes like Pinot Noir or Pinot Meunier. And, you know, you don't have to find these particular bottles, but if you have a good wine shop, they're going to have a selection of these small grower producers. And you can't go wrong exploring. That's what's really fun.
Eric, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And don't worry, we'll have a list of the champagnes and the wines that Eric Asimov mentioned, as well as an excerpt of his book, How to Love Wine, a Memoir and Manifesto, at hereandnow.org. And while there, weigh in on wine. Kim, who works for a wine distributor, writes us, I couldn't really understand the rise in the sales of Sancerre until someone mentioned that it's the drink of choice in 50 Shades of Grey. Sigh, the movie Sideways all over again. Okay, well, now we know the sudden appearance of that wine means someone's also imbibing the book. Let us know what you're noticing. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Series and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us again here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.